Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. This is Presenting Pixie Dust, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Carr, and I'm joined once more by the wonderful Brett Harvey.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, Brett. How you going?
Yeah, I'm good.
That's fabulous. Very good. What did you think about the announcement that Mulan was going to be premiering on Disney Plus?
Well, you know, I love seeing a good live-action remake.
Mm-hmm.
And having watched Mulan recently with you,
mm-hmm.
I was going, yeah, you know, this would be something really, really worth doing. Disney does these things well these days.
The live actions.
Yeah, yeah, especially I think, you know, we identified a whole bunch of stuff to do with the Chinese culture
mm-hmm.
that wasn't quite right. And I'm hoping to see that improves in the live action remake. I hope they're a bit more sensitive to the, you know, the culture, Chinese culture.
What did you think about the fact that it is a premium piece of content that you have to pay more for if you want to watch it on Disney Plus?
Yeah, so,
even though you're already paying for Disney Plus.
Yeah, so the story goes, what is it, $30 American?
I think it's 30
to
US,
watch it.
Yeah.
Look, to me, that's a bit steep. I think if you're paying for the service already, there should be some kind of concession.
Would
there.
You? But you'd pay more than that to go to the cinemas and watch it.
That's right.
But
it also may not be a movie that I go to the cinemas to watch. Like,
then you wouldn't be the one that they'd be marketing for, I suppose, with that $30
well,
fee.
That's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, they've got to try something. They've got to make money. And
sure.
Not that they're short on money, but
oh,
they,
no,
don't,
but
like,
you know,
they
put,
don't like to make a loss.
You put hundreds of yeah. millions of dollars into these live action, especially something as big budget as Mulan, I would imagine, is. I haven't done the research on Mulan, but I would assume that it is quite an expensive film to make.
Yeah, I would reckon.
Yeah, so I think that it would probably need,
because you've either got to go to the place and film it,
mm-hmm.
Fly to China and film it, or there's going to be a lot of CGI.
Yeah, I think that's a bit so, of both, actually. I think that they did go to China to film most of Mulan, but
yeah,
I just don't know how I feel about paying extra for. I mean, I suppose you would pay more. We probably will pay it to watch it, or wait until December when it becomes available to everyone on Disney Plus.
Mm.
But I suppose COVID's really mucked everything up, hasn't it? All the releases, and I'm really looking forward to the Rock movie that's coming, that was meant to be coming out this year, about the Jungle River cruise, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
At Disneyland and Disney World. And they made a movie on that ride, much like they made the Haunted Mansion movie with Eddie Murphy, you know, what, like 15 years ago?
Yep.
So I was really looking forward to seeing that too, and now that's been pushed back to next year as well. I suppose they're hoping for a theatre release. But Mulan had already been released.
Mm.
I think it had premiered, premiered in March, and then
and
see
they put
you later.
They put the hold on it, didn't they, really?
Yeah, they put a hold on it.
And I think, look, there's a loyal Disney crowd that are going to pay the money.
Sure.
But, you know,
many already have, because it has already come out.
Yeah, yeah, sure. If they paid, if there was a million people that paid $30, there's 30 million.
I wonder how many.
It doesn't quite get the money back. Like,
no.
When you're talking hundreds of millions to put, you know, to produce.
I wonder how many people have got Disney Plus subscriptions. I wonder what the numbers are on that. Surely it would be a fair few.
Yeah.
And then even if, so say, I don't know, 10 million, do you reckon worldwide would have Disney Plus subscriptions?
Yeah.
You would think so. More than that. But let's be conservative and say 10 million people have got it. And if, you know, a third of them decided to pay for this content, then, you know, that's two and all.
Yeah, the diehard fans would. The diehards would.
The diehards are the ones that are really waiting for Mulan. Yeah. But we're not talking about Mulan today.
No.
No. We're actually talking about The Emperor's New Groove,
which
is the movie that we watched and we're going to be talking about and reviewing and chatting about today. What did you think of this movie, Brett?
Well, I got to say straight up, I loved it. I think it's a very good movie.
Mm-hmm. Was this the first time that you'd seen it?
I'd seen bits of it in the past, but never sat down and watched the whole thing start to finish.
I haven't seen it. Oh, I have now, but I hadn't seen it.
And so, you know, like, yeah, I think it was just a really good, fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's something that's simple about it.
Yes.
And the way that it runs, the plot and things like that. But, you know, I think one thing that I love is the visual of it. You know, all of the, you know, South American, the Peruvian sort of architecture and things like that. Within the movie, it's just something I just love. So.
I feel that same way about The Princess and the Frog and seeing all the New Orleans scenery and stuff.
Yeah, because if you've got a connection with that that place.
Sure.
Yeah, then if for anyone who's ever been to South America and seen some of the ruins, Machu Picchu and all those sort of things, then this movie just is like really cool for that.
It's ticking all the boxes for you.
Yeah, I love it.
Good. Oh, I'm so glad. Well, shall we get into some of our fun facts and stats?
Yeah.
And get into it? All right. So this movie, The Emperor's New Groove, premiered on December 10th, 2000 at the El Capitan Theatre in Hollywood, California.
Yeah. 2000, that's 20 years ago.
20 years ago,
yeah. It's amazing to think. And for a movie that's 20 years old, like I said, the visual effects, the animation's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, well, it has been remastered and stuff, I'm sure, since 2000. But it's very good. I thought that as I was watching it too, just the colours that were chosen and how it's presented is really quite good and quite funny. The movie runs for 78 minutes and it has a score of 7.3 on IMDb and 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. So very well received.
78 minutes is pretty short.
Well, yeah. It's on the shortish side.
It's a good 15, 20 minutes shorter than a lot of the other ones.
What did we watch recently that was about that length as well?
I said that's short.
The Great Mouse Detective. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we watched. I said, well, that's on the shorter side of an animated feature film. Of a, you know, today's standard of animated feature films.
Mm.
I think that Frozen 2 must have gone for nearly 2 hours.
Yeah, that was epic.
Yeah, and for this one to have just not even hit an hour and a half is a sort of short movie. But it's a very simple storyline. I can't imagine that you could have stretched it out.
Yeah, look, we'll get into the characters later, but I think the only way you could really stretch it out is by adding more characters and having just a bit more complexity to the plot. But at the same time, maybe that would ruin the movie.
Yeah, I think that padding might not add to it. Sure.
We've talked about a lot of movies where it seems like they have a whole movie and then they add a bit more, another half an hour on.
And we complain about that as
well. And you're like, you know, maybe it just is what it is.
No, I like it. I just think that it's on the shortish side. It's just an observation.
Yeah.
It's not here nor there as a criticism. It's just an observation that's on the shortish side, which I suppose if you're sitting down to watch a movie with, you know, young children, that's kind of what you want, a short movie that'll hold attention for 78 minutes and then we get to move on. All right, you ready for our fun facts?
Yeah.
You're going to love these fun facts. I actually think the story of this movie, the story of how this movie sort of came to be, is more interesting than the movie itself.
Yeah.
So this movie started to be developed in about 94, right? And, of course, came out in 2000. So that's a six-year process of development.
Mm.
And if you think back to 1994, this is not written down as my fun facts. I'm just, you know, spitballing here. If you think back to 1994, that's Lion King and those big... That's right in the middle of the Disney Renaissance when all these amazing Disney films are coming out, right? So this movie was originally going to be called Kingdom of the Sun and was going to be a classic Disney-style musical epic about an Incan emperor that switches places with a commoner that shares a resemblance to him, like an Incan adaptation of Prince and the Pauper, right? So after the disappointing box office performances of the sweeping musicals Pocahontas and The Hunchback of Notre Dame, the film was reworked into the buddy comedy that we have now. But there's more to it than that, right? This leads me into fun fact number two.
Yeah.
So when it was still Kingdom of the Sun, musician Sting was hired to write all the music, much like Elton John was brought on for The Lion King and Phil Collins did Tarzan and, you know, all that stuff. But when the movie was reworked in the late 1990s, it was about 50% finished at that point. And they had, you know, test audiences watch what they had and stuff like that. And it was going really badly. It was performing really poorly.
Yeah.
And all the footage at 50% finished, all the footage and all but one of Sting's songs were thrown out and they just completely started again.
Really?
Yeah. So that was in about 1998, I think, that they just went, nah, we can't do this.
Wow.
We can't
I'd
use
love
what
to
we've
see
got.
That footage.
I know, wouldn't it be good?
And
you
Sting.
Can hear some of the songs online that they're around.
Yeah.
Because they were produced and fully done. There were actors that had recorded voices and stuff, characters that were completely cut in the new version.
Yeah.
So big name characters that were big name actors, that were completely cut out and new people were hired and brought on. It's just bizarre to me. So fun fact number three, nothing to do with that, but just keeping that in the back of your mind. Fun fact number three. So Patrick Warburton, who does the voice of Kronk in this movie, who is also probably best known as Putty in Seinfeld.
Yeah.
That's where we know him from. And he also does the, if you've been to Disneyland or Walt Disney World, he also does the instructional video for Soarin' Around the World, which is quite funny.
We love that.
It's my favorite ride. You know it's my favorite ride.
And how many times have we go on it?
Oh, gosh. When I went to Disneyland with my mum, I went on it every day, sometimes twice a day, whenever I could get fast passes for it. So I must have gone on it about 5 or 6 times in that 4-day period.
Mm.
And then when we went, how many times did we go on it? 3?
Yeah,
3
at least.
In Epcot?
Yeah.
So we went on twice in the same day.
Yep.
Because one we had a fast pass for, and I was so excited to take you on that ride because, gosh, I love it. And then we went on at the end of the day, of the night, on that same day because it was a very low wait time, so we went back on it.
There was no one around.
Yeah. Did we go back? Did we ride it another time?
I reckon we did.
Did we ride it another time or did we ride it at Disneyland?
At Disneyland.
Oh, we rode it at Disneyland Okay. Cool. Ride 'em with you. So we did it 3 times on that trip. And I must have been on that ride like nearly 10 times. Oh, I love it. It's just my favorite because I'm not a thrill seeker. So I'm not going
to
go on anything
scary.
It's the closest
thing you can get to a roller coaster without it being a roller coaster.
Oh, yeah, I can't do it because at least I know that I'm just, you know, I'm safe. It's not moving all that much. It's like the screen's moving around me. It's my favorite kind of ride. Let me go back. Patrick Warburton improvised when Kronk hummed his own theme song when he's carrying Kuzco in the bag to the waterfall, and he's like humming a sort of Mission Impossible style, song. Disney's legal department had Warburton sign all the rights to the humming composition over to them. I don't know what they've done with it or if they've done anything with that, but he has no rights to his own freestyle
Isn't
humming.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. So I don't know if they were made. Maybe they were going to use it for a doll or something and have them.
Possibly.
I don't know. What is it? Maybe a ride?
Yeah.
Because it's technically a song then if he hummed it.
I don't know.
Do you think he could repeat it if he tried? Or if it was just a freestyle improvisation, like you and I make up songs all the time and I think I couldn't sing that again if you paid me. I don't even know what that was.
Yeah, it's a strange one. Very interesting.
So somewhere in a vault, Disney's got the rights to Patrick Warburton humming a little ditty.
But I suppose if he's humming it in the character, you know, as the character,
mm-hmm.
then they ought to have the rights to that, you know.
Is that your opinion?
Well, I don't know. In the music industry is a bit funny like that. If it counts as a song, then there's really weird sort of laws about the use of your own music.
Taylor Swift has had a lot of trouble with that because she doesn't own her music for her first like 6 albums.
Yep.
And she worked really hard to try and get that back, to own that, to buy it back off her record
company.
Even
just to be able to perform it when it doesn't belong to you.
And they wouldn't sell it back to her.
Yeah, and there's been other examples of people where they've created new songs and have been sued by the company that owns the rights to a song that it sounds like.
Yeah.
And it turns out that person who wrote the newest song is the person who wrote the original song. And so it's like, how can he copyright his own song?
Well, you can get in trouble if your music kind of sounds like something that already exists, even if you didn't write it. Even if you didn't realise that it kind of sounds the same. There's only so many chords. Like, there's only so many ways you can rearrange melodies and stuff, I suppose. But,
I'd say it'd be something to do with merchandising, knowing Disney.
Yeah, probably. You're probably right. Okay, fun fact number 4.
Yep.
Eartha Kitt, who voiced Yzma, also played Catwoman in the original Batman television show, and this is part of the reason why her character was turned into a cat when they were animating the film.
Really?
Yeah, it's a nice little
nod
to that.
That's cute.
Yeah. Fun fact number five, Cuzco was named after the ancient capital of the Incas.
Yeah.
This city still exists in the Andes Mountains in southern Peru at an elevation of 11,200 feet or 3,200 meters. When you were in Peru, did you go to Cuzco?
We did, yes. Yep. Yeah, it was a fantastic place.
Tell us about it.
They got an airport there, which I thought was interesting.
Did you fly into that airport?
No, we didn't. We bussed in. But the Incan...
Was it a horrible bus trip?
No,
I can only imagine.
No,
like...
we had a really good bus. I've got to say that. Yeah. Although they drive pretty crazy around there, I have to say that. We were driving the roads at nighttime in this bus and the drivers were just crazy.
But is it we never had, or Thailand?
Yeah, kind of, but we never had an accident. So, no. You know, but I tell you what, I just remember we were all holding on like fingernails gripping into the seats
because of
what we could see happening on the roads around us. And, you know.
It's interesting, anyway. Though, in those countries that they sort of just all make way for each other. It looks like madness when you're in those countries traveling on the road. But they'll just let each other go in and out and they all cut in and out of traffic and everything. And no one gets bothered and no one gets road rage. It's just like, yeah, right, that's just how we do things.
Yeah, so Cuzco has a huge amount of the Incan temples. You know, to walk around them and see them, it's just incredible. They're many, many hundreds of years old, to thousands of years old, and they're just like seeing the pyramids. You know, they're just so big, and you just kind of go, wow, what must life have been like for them back when this was a place that, you know, where people actually just lived. Yeah, we get a bit of a taste of that in The Emperor's New Groove. You know, it becomes such a wonderful part of the backdrop of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think the plot of the movie and the people and characters could happen anywhere, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a really, it's really visually spectacular.
Mm. Oh, awesome. Okay, fun fact number six. According to the DVD commentary, Chicha is the first pregnant character to appear in a Disney animated film.
Really?
Yeah, who, of course, is the wife of Pacha
in this movie.
And she, you know what I love about her character too, is that she's pregnant, heavily pregnant in this film, but it's never it's never really mentioned other than by her. But it's not sort of something that is a hindrance to her.
No.
She's getting stuff done. She's the only time that it's really sort of becomes a thing is when she like drops stuff on the floor and she can't bend down to pick it up and you see her sort of wobbling trying to get it.
Yzma knocks the coffee cup on.
Yes.
The teacup onto the floor, and she has to struggle to get down
and
pick it up.
So she sort of like squats backwards and tries to pick it up, very pregnant woman-esque.
Yeah.
So I thought that she's a great character and a really good representation of a mum who is, you know, working, getting stuff done.
She's got two little kids running around.
And pregnant and waiting for her husband to get home, who's the leader of the town. All right, fun fact number seven. After its long and tumultuous production, The Emperor's New Groove was a solid success and is now widely regarded as one of the best films of the post-Renaissance Disney era.
Mm.
So, of course, it got a direct-to-video sequel in 2005 that focused on the standout comic relief character Kronk. So it's called Kronk's New Groove. If you go on Disney Plus, you can watch it. So the story revolved around Kronk struggling for his dad's approval of his cooking aspirations. Though it was poorly received by critics and fans alike, and it currently sports a resounding 0% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. They were a lot. In the 90s, there seemed to be a lot of direct-to-video sequels. Like Aladdin had a couple. The Little Mermaid had some,
and
obviously this one had one.
And typically these poor sequels had significantly bad animation as well.
Poorer animation quality.
Yeah, they were definitely a step down.
They're not all bad though. Like The Lion King 2 was amazing.
Mm.
It had incredible songs and everything. Like I think that it gets direct-to-video sequels get sort of... you know, stepped on a little bit, but some of them are quite good.
Mm.
And that one was very good. I can't speak for Kronk's New Groove, though, because I haven't seen that and I probably won't. All right. And last one, fun fact number 8.
Yeah.
A documentary called The Sweatbox was made about the making of this film.
Yeah.
It illustrated the slow and painful transformation from Kingdom of the Sun to The Emperor's New Groove, including the director, musician Sting, whose wife created the documentary,
yeah.
artists and voice cast being dismayed by the new direction the film was making. Wow. The film's major theme is creative executive conflicts, and you can watch it on YouTube if you're looking for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, okay.
I'll link it in the show notes as well because it's probably really worth a watch. Yeah, yeah. Just if you look up The Sweatbox on YouTube, it comes up straight away. But I will link it in the comments as well in case you're interested in watching it, because I think that it would be an interesting take on sort of the drama behind what became a very comedic and well-loved film.
Mm.
So it would be interesting to know what the footage that they had for Kingdom of the Sun would have looked like.
Yeah.
Because so much work on it was already done when it was thrown out. It would just be interesting. Just be interesting to know. All right. And that wraps up the fun facts for today.
Yeah.
All right, Brett, shall we talk about this film?
I've got to say, I like the choice of the title, The Emperor's New Groove. What I found really interesting in the story is that it's not really talked about much.
No, it's mentioned once.
It's mentioned once at the very beginning yep. when there's an old man who bumps him or something, Cusco,
yep.
the emperor. And
who's got Piglet's voice from Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
Did you notice that? It's the same voice actor.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So you can really tell that sort of Piglet-y type of
yeah.
voice that comes through.
Cusco literally kicks him out of the palace.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know... And the old man says, oh, be careful, you know, you don't want to spoil his groove or something like that.
Yeah, I wrote beware the groove.
Beware the groove. Yeah, and but maybe, I don't know, maybe that's part of the artistic nature of this movie is that they didn't sort of spend much time on that. Like, for those that don't know, Cusco literally gets turned into a
llama.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess that becomes his new groove, really. He through the process of winning back his human form, I guess, he has some character development, you know, he learns some things and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that becomes his new groove, but it's just interesting that it doesn't really get spoken about.
No, it's just all. Right at the start. You would think that they would allude back to it at the end
yeah.
to use those words again to sort of tie it all together, but that doesn't happen. It
doesn't happen. I was really surprised.
Maybe it's in a deleted scene.
Could
maybe
be.
That was in part, some
maybe
of the
they
part
just forgot
that
to
ended
put it
up
in,
on
like.
The, ended up on the cutting room floor.
So, yeah, I just found that really interesting.
Do you know what I found interesting? The beginning when we just got hit with the Tom Jones song out of nowhere. I'm thinking, this is strange. Like, this is a weird choice to start with. Like, I wasn't expecting Tom Jones to come at me so early in this movie.
And the other thing, too, is, you know, you mentioned before that the original concept was a musical movie.
Yes.
And yet this movie
was not.
Didn't have many songs in it at all.
Well, there weren't any songs that the characters sang.
No.
It was.
So you had the Tom Jones one
yep.
kind of explaining Cusco as this wonderful emperor, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really cool song.
It was a good song. It just felt a little bit out of place.
It did, because there was nothing to follow up on with it, really.
It was interesting.
You know, like there was no... Look, even Radigan had a song, you know, like, come on.
Radigan had like the only song. Radigan and Sexy Mouse song.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we should be using that as the pinnacle to which all musical movies should aspire to.
No. I think, you know, look, Cusco's voiced by David Spade and he's got a very unique voice. It's kind of whiny kind of voice.
And instantly recognisable.
Instantly recognisable. And it suited the character to a T.
Yeah.
Because he was this... you know, sort of very spoilt kind of emperor.
Yes.
You know, and he wanted everything his own way. And David Spade just has this terrific take on that character. You know, he really kind of almost gets under your skin
mm-hmm.
how annoying he can be and his whining.
what I thought was interesting as well is that everybody in this film had a recognizable voice.
Mm.
All of the speaking characters. So, of course, you had David Spade as Kuzco. You had John Goodman voicing Parcher.
Yep.
And this was pre-Monsters, Inc. days. So this was before he was Sully in Monsters, Inc. We also had Eartha Kitt, of course, voicing Yzma. We had Patrick Warburton as Kronk. We had Wendy Malick as well, who did, what did I say her name was? Cheech's voice.
Yeah.
And she, of course, was in, was it Just Shoot Me with David Spade? That
Yes, that's
that,
right.
That sort of sitcom that was on in the 2000s.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a great show. I love that show. Did you watch Just Shoot Me when it was on?
Yeah, I love that show.
Yeah, that was awesome. But, of course, all of these voices that we know so well, I think it's interesting that this was just a big name production.
Yep. Yeah, look, and I thought that they did a great job of, you know.
Yes, they really they were all very well cast.
Yeah.
But what I think is the problem, but what I find as a personal thing, when there are so many, when they're all well recognized voices, is that I struggle to detach from the actor. Does that make sense?
Seeing the actor and
hearing the actor and seeing someone different. I can struggle with that a little bit. What were we watching? Again, I say this a lot. What were we watching recently where I said, I just can't get past it. That's their voice.
Oh, yeah, nah.
I don't remember.
Got nothing.
But I don't remember. But anyway, that's just something that that's a personal thing for me. I think that all of these actors played these roles brilliantly. I think that they were very well cast. But it's a slightly little bit distracting for me.
Yeah. I thought they were fantastic. Really.
They were. They definitely were fantastic.
Yeah. But I think, you know, this movie relies a lot. Because, you know, once you, in terms of plot, obviously Kuzco gets turned into a llama by Yzma, and she's like this evil character.
She's his like assistant, isn't
Initially,
she?
Initially, she's like the
his advisor.
Advisor
she's like the
to
Jafar
the
to the
yeah,
Sultan.
And it turns out she's the one pulling daggers. and so she actually wants to kill him, but it because of Kronk's bumbling ends up turning him into a llama.
And the fact that every single potion looks exactly the same.
Yeah,
they're all the same color. They're all in the same bottles.
And then so Kronk has to go and get rid of Kuzco, and then Kuzco ends up going away with Parcher and back to Parcher's village.
He ends up on the back of his...
Yeah.
Back of his cart in a sack.
And so then you've got Parcher and Kuzco kind of powering up for their part of the story, and you've got Yzma and Kronk desperately trying to capture those two and kill Kuzco.
Well, of course, Yzma at the beginning of this doesn't know that he's not dead because Kronk tells her that he's dead, kind of, in so many words. And I love that when he's going to kill him, he has like what's probably one of my favorite parts of this movie, which is he calls him his shoulder angel and shoulder devil, which is his conscience, of course, sort of arguing about what he needs to do. He's such a simple, beautiful character, Kronk is.
Yeah.
He's got a good heart. He's just very, very dumb. But he, of course, tells Yzma that everything's fine.
Yeah.
Which sort of reminds me a bit of Hercules, you know, when Hades tells Pain and Panic to kill him and they don't. And they're like, if he finds out, if he's good. And they have to tell him later when they find out that this is going to be a problem, they have to tell him that Hercules is still alive. It was sort of this same situation where Yzma thought everything was fine. Things were going real well until they weren't, of course. And then Kronk had to tell her that he was still alive, that he hadn't killed him.
Mm. My favourite part is when Yzma tells him to get the potion and Kronk says this really funny bit where he goes, I mean, this is my best and probably worst
Patrick Warburton
impersonation, but here goes. He says, "Oh, right, the poison for Kuzco. The poison chosen especially to kill Kuzco. Kuzco's poison. That poison?" And it just, there's all these little things like that, these little tiny things that aren't really huge parts of the story, but I find they're just really chuckle along funny. there's a lot of slapstick. There's a lot of bumbling, you know, silliness right throughout the whole movie.
Yeah. I think that the writers of this film did a very good job because the dialogue's very snappy all the way through. And I think that I wonder how much of this was improvised by the actors and how much of it was written down.
Mm.
Like his whole, you know, the poison for Cusco, Cusco's poison. I wonder if that was written down explicitly like that. I'd love to see a script. Or if that was something that he just sort of spitballed on the day and came up with. You are right that there's a lot of slapstick in this. Most of the comedy in this is physical comedy.
Yeah.
So
banging, like, and hitting and falling and crashing. And
when Cusco is in the forest and there's the squirrel and then the jaguars and, you know, the rope around the tree that Pacha and him are, you know, stuck to the either side of the tree and everything. Yeah. It's, there's a lot of that sort of physical, oh, no, we're in danger. How are we going to get out of it sort of thing. That happens over and over and over in this movie.
So I reckon kids would really like this movie for that, particularly for that reason.
Yeah.
There's a lot of easily accessible, you know, because Disney often do these things where they have a lot of adult content in, because they don't call them children's movies, do they?
They're family movies.
They're family movies. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of adult content, jokes in there that just... you know, adults sort of get and kids don't. But in this movie, it's all very accessible to kids. Yeah, I find that really, it's really a good fun movie for that reason.
I loved, my favourite scene was when they're in the restaurant and they're, you know, so, because I think that it's hilarious that first of all that there's a restaurant on the side of a mountain somewhere in Peru, a diner where they can just stop in and Pacha and Cusco are sitting down to have lunch.
Mm.
Cusco, of course, still a llama. And Isma and Krog turn up and there's this whole sort of very, you know, 1920s silent movie sort of scene, like of them missing each other, constantly missing each other, that one's sticking their head in just as one is leaving and they don't see each other. And it's just, and it goes on.
Charlie Chaplin kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And it goes on for a long time. It's not a couple of times. It's a whole sequence where they keep missing each other like and don't Hill realize. Thing, really, and I thought that that was really clever and really, really well done. I really, that was my favorite scene in the movie.
It does that, but it doesn't get boring as well.
No.
Like you don't, you know, it doesn't get to the point where you're going to go, you know, can we skip to the next
scene? I think it's because you're waiting for them to see each other, because that's always how these scenes end. But they don't. Here, they don't see each other.
They get away.
Yeah, they get away, which is, and they don't even realise that this is happening as well, which is really quite funny. I liked it. I thought it was really good.
And even just like there's some subtle things in there where, so they go into the diner and they know that as a llama, Cusco's going to get it recognized.
Because there's a no llama sign. That's on right, the door. Like of no all shirt, things. No shoes, no service. No, it's llama. No llamas.
And so he decides to dress not as a male llama, but as a female llama.
Just,
which
just a female.
Yeah,
just
as a sorry, not a female llama, as a female. And it just kind of adds to that, that sort of just that sort of quirky humor.
One unanswered thing, and maybe I missed it when we were watching this, but there's this scene where the kids, Parch's kids, are in bed and they wake up and they're having these prophetic dreams about the log and Dad. I had a dream that Dad was kissing a llama because, of course, he has to do CPR on him at one point in the story. And I just thought, does that ever get resolved, the fact that the kids are waking up and dreaming prophecies? Is this a thing?
It doesn't.
No. I wonder why that was kept in, because it didn't give anything to the story.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that kids are seeing the future? It's just humorous.
It's just humorous.
Okay.
That they happen to be having dreams and seeing.
So you think that they just happen to be having these dreams that they didn't have anything to do with anything?
Well, I mean, and of course the mum was there and the mum would have just thought that it was silly child nonsense, but we know as the audience that it's actually happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought that that was interesting. That was a weird thing, I thought, to put in the movie.
Yeah, look, I felt like, you know, like we said before, it was a shortened movie. They probably could have spent some more time on some other characters.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't spend much time with the family.
No, with the two little kids
and the wife. So what happens is the other part of the plot of this story, Spoiler alert is that Cusco, the emperor, wants to build... He calls Pacha into his kingdom, up to the palace, because he wants to tell Pacha that he's going to build basically an extension of his palace on top of Pacha's hill.
His holiday home. His holiday house.
Where Pacha's house is.
Where his whole village
is. Yeah, where his whole village mm-hmm. is, effectively kicking everybody out in a very, very, very selfish way. And that's the whole, you know, values thing that comes through in this movie, his change of heart and all that sort of stuff. Where was I going with that?
we didn't spend much time with the family.
Oh, and so what happens is Pacha, he really takes it upon himself to try and resolve this problem and sort it out. And he actually keeps this problem from his wife. I don't know if you noticed that. He keeps it from his wife and tries to solve it himself, which is, you know, it's just a real... You're talking 20 years ago, probably before men's mental health and well-being became a subject of concern, you know.
It's
like,
getting real heavy.
Yeah,
real quick,
yeah, like, you know, depression and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, sure.
But look, there are some movies that do highlight these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's an example of where, you know, the man's trying to take all this burden on himself and resolve it, not letting his wife in. We see this happen in a lot of movies. This is mm-hmm. not the only one. But what it also did is it meant that realistically that the family didn't play any real part in the solving of this problem.
No.
So if you're talking about maybe some missing content, maybe that was something that was missing from the movie a bit. There is a part where Yzma and Kronk go into the family home.
Because they're looking for Cusco.
Yeah.
They trace him back to Pacha.
Sure. So the wife's involved there, but not in a very, like, you know, it's a pretty kind of, you know, basic sort of way. It's mm-hmm. not, and there's no real character development or anything like that. And she's not helping to solve the problem that Pacha's trying to solve. She's trying to get these evil people out of the house.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, I just find that really interesting. But it's, yeah, like, it's just a lot of funny little stuff.
Yeah.
Funny little things that happen along the way. I reckon every, this, you know, if you had to count it, I reckon, like, every 10 seconds there's something to laugh at.
I laughed out loud in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, a few times. And not just a chuckle, like a ha! thing as we were watching it, because, like I said, I hadn't seen it before. And everybody who has seen it raves about it, about how good it is. And it was great. It was just sort of very surface level great, though. Like how we talked about Captain America last week, that the story and all the characters were just very surface level.
Mm.
Sort of felt the same about this movie. There's not any real great character development with any of the characters except Cusco.
Yeah.
And even then it's like, it's sort of hard to explain because you can't even really pinpoint a moment where he decides that he's going to be better.
Yeah.
He just sort of goes from like sort of lying and tricking to, okay, well, Pacha's kind of saved my life about 12 times at this point. So maybe I should, you know, just move somewhere else. Like, I guess that character, that change in character was not really fully developed.
Yeah, I think there's only one really big part near the end where they're both hanging on the side of this big kind of building structure, and Pacha's going to fall, and you've got Cusco, who's basically got the choice to make, save the potion.
Which will turn him back into a human.
Hanging, you know, on
precariously.
Precariously on the edge of a cliff, you know, or save Pacha, and he saves chooses to save Pacha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yzma does do a classic like Disney fall off the building.
We never see her land though.
Well, no, because she doesn't die. We do see her later and she doesn't die.
No, that's right.
There.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was interesting that they did like their whole, you know, the falling backwards
through
the clouds and everything where you don't see the landing, you just see the fall. I loved after Cusco becomes human, right at the end when he builds his, you know, summer house on the hill next door to Pacha's.
Yeah.
I loved the scene with Kronk at the end where he's teaching the kids like the scout He's like a scout leader teaching the kids how to speak squirrel. Because I just thought it was the most hilarious thing. I thought that that was brilliant. Yeah. The way that that was done. Like, it's just so ludicrous and hilarious, and I loved it. Mm. I just thought it was really, really funny and really well done.
Yeah.
But I also felt that this movie felt quick.
Yeah, it... I think it's just there's a lot of pace to it.
Yes, that's probably it.
There's only a few moments when there's not a lot of action. So, you know, I think when Pacha and Cusco are sitting next to a river that they've fallen in, and Pacha saved him, and it's like raining and stuff. And
he covers him with his little blanket.
Yeah, it just sort of slows down for a bit, for a few minutes. But the rest of it's very pacey.
Yeah, definitely.
Lots of stuff happening. Dum, 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 dum.
I just want... Oh, sorry.
And a lot of... There's a lot of talking. It's a very talky movie. Mm-hmm. Very talky movie.
You know what I was wondering? As Pacha was saying, when the bridge collapses and they now have to go around.
Yeah.
And he said it's going to take 4 days to get around without using the bridge to Cusco's kingdom, his palace. I just thought, how bizarre. Pacha's pregnant wife... is sitting at home.
Yeah.
And this man's now going to be gone for an extra 4 days. How does he tell her that he's going to be gone? Like, because you would, like, you'd call, you'd text now in 2020, but how is he going to, how is she, just going to be sitting at home? She's going to think he's dead.
Send like, up smoke signals or something?
I don't know. Do you have to send up, how do you communicate?
Squirrel.
A squirrel. Yeah, that's it. As long as you can speak squirrel, though, because that's the most important part.
Yeah, it is a strange... Like, I think the word you said there was perfect. Ludicrous.
Yeah.
It's a ludicrous movie.
Yeah.
But very, very enjoyable.
Yeah. I think that the part that I was just really stuck on was the Tom Jones song at the start. And he sings again at the end, doesn't he? There's another Tom Jones song at the end.
Yeah.
And there isn't a Sting song until the credits.
Yeah. It was really weird. There's some weird things like that in there. Yeah. I thought there could have been some more songs. They could have gone that way.
They could have gone fully musical.
I reckon they could have.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. It's a shame.
Yeah. Well, I think that because there's a few other movies that have music that is not part of the movie, like Lilo and Stitch, for example.
Mm.
But the music fits.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like it fits with the action and everything that's happening. And I don't know, man, this... Tom Jones just snuck in there, and I was like, that's just a really strange choice. Again, speaking of voices that are so recognisable, that I'm like, why is Tom Jones here? Like, I don't understand.
Mm.
I don't understand. You could have put anybody else singing that song, and I probably would have gotten on board. But Tom Jones, like, why didn't you have, like, a young person singing it? So to sort of emulate the character of Cusco.
Yep.
Being young and...
They could have had Cusco himself singing it.
Does David Spade sing? Surely.
It wouldn't matter. They could get someone to be the singing.
Well, I suppose Jonathan Taylor Thomas didn't sing I Just Can't Wait to Be King for The Lion King.
So. And that's totally acceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't quite...
Because then they had this random animated character that was sort of like a disco
sort of
character singing the song. Yeah. It was just weird.
It was just weird.
It was odd. It was a strange artistic choice.
Yeah.
They probably thought, you know what, we've got to give them something. Like, they're going to wonder who was singing this song, so we've got to animate someone in there. But I thought that the animation of the characters was very good in this.
Yeah.
I thought that the animation of Cusco was great. He matched both the llama and the person match David Spade's voice very well. And I thought it was really good.
Yeah, it was excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of stuff was excellent.
It's interesting that whenever John Goodman gets animated, it's always sort of the same character.
Big and oafy,
sort of cuddly. And
well, it matches his deep voice, though. It does. He's got one of those real kind of in the jowls kind of a voice.
Yeah. So it's interesting they didn't go that way with Captain America, though, did they? They didn't make his voice higher when he was... Skinny Steve. They just didn't worry about that there.
Yeah, I think the good thing about this movie is, even though it's 20 years old, it doesn't look like it's 20 years old.
No.
No.
I think it holds up today. It's very good.
Yeah.
It's very entertaining. Is it, you know, a movie that's going to, you know, teach a great lesson about kindness, whatever. Not really. No. But it's entertaining the whole way through.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So do you have anything else you want to add?
No, that was really good.
Get your llamas. Get How many llamas?
Get your kids and go and watch the movie.
How many llamas do you give this movie?
How many llamas?
Yep.
Oh, it's a strong 7. I reckon 7.5.
Oh, 7.5. Which half? The back half or the front half?
Probably the front half.
The left half or the right half?
Yeah. Nah, it was a good movie. How many potions would you give it?
I would say the same. I thought like 7 out of 10. It was good. I'd watch it again.
Yeah.
It was good. It was funny.
Yeah, it was good funny.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's definitely one that I would recommend.
Yeah, it's a good family movie. Good. It's not like niche.
No.
You know, it's good.
I think everyone can watch it and enjoy it and get something out of it.
Absolutely.
And I'm glad that we watched it because coming up on its 20-year anniversary.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Mm. That's crazy that most of that, like, of course, there would have been background stuff and everything that was done by hand, but, done by computers, but, like, the fact that people are that smart that they can animate, like, it's just mental to me. Like, I don't fully understand how animation works and, like, it blows my mind.
Mm.
Yeah. I'd love to get an animator on on the show. If you're an animator and you're listening or you know an animator, please send us through their information because it would be amazing to get an actual hand animator on to find out exactly how this process works because I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Like in my head, I sort of understand like how a flip book works, but it can't be that like that much. Like it's so much work. Especially if you're like the lead in charge of a character because you know how when these movies come out, they're like, you know, this person animated Belle, this person animated Cusco, you know. That's a lot of work for one person.
Mm.
It's just bizarre to me. Anyway, that about wraps us up, I think, for another week. Thank you so much for tuning back in to listen to our little show. We appreciate and love every one of you. Thank you to the people that have sent in reviews because we read all of those and have DM'd their thoughts on the show. We really, really, really appreciate it. You can check out Brett's podcast, Teaching for Dummies, wherever you get your podcasts. I would really love it if you're listening, and I know how many people listen to the show as well, and I just think if every person who's listening went on and wrote a review and left 5 stars and wrote a review, how many more people would find the show? It would just be incredible because that is a way that you can help support the show and it doesn't cost anything and it'll only take about, you know, a minute of your time to go onto Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review and write something nice so that other people can enjoy the show too. So thank you so much for joining in. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep up with all the latest news on the show. And we will chat to you next week. Bye.
Bye.